Well, hello, hello. Welcome back to another episode of People Pleaser. That's right. From a Blankenfort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, it's this show. And I'm Austin Archer. And here's the thing. I don't know what to say or do anymore. I'm out of, it's been 2 weeks. I go to therapy now every other week. I had to go to every other week this year because of financial reasons. I had to go back down to every other week going to my therapist. So I saw my therapist on election day, and then I saw her today. And we were like, well, here we are. We're 2 weeks into the new world. And how is everyone doing? And the thing is, I haven't made any content in the last 2 weeks. I made one episode of the podcast where I sort of vented and said my piece. I've just sort of been staring off into space. I don't know what to say. I see a lot of my cohorts and colleagues online in the online left space saying stuff. They're all still making videos. They all still have hot takes. I see them out on Threads, and now I'm on Blue Sky. Jesus Christ, save me. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm doing it. Fine, whatever, fine. If that's what we're doing, I'm on Blue Sky. I've already got gripes with Blue Sky. Why does my username have to be yourpalaustin.bsky.social? What is that? I hate that. I hate that so much. Hate that they only do 60-second videos. Knock it off. Everybody's doing longer than 60-second videos. Even YouTube Shorts is now making their videos longer than 60 seconds. Knock it off with the 60-second time limit. Okay? What is it, 2018? Come on. Grow up, Blue Sky. Do 90-second videos at least. Maybe 3-minute-long videos, but I'm on Blue Sky. Anyway, the point is, I see people out there. Everybody's got their hot take. Everybody's got their finger pointed at who they think messed up, why it didn't work out, the Democratic Party should have done this, Harris and Wallace messed up on this, people are just too stupid, and that's why, and there's a lot of validity to it all. I definitely agree with a lot of things. I disagree with a lot of things. I see it. I see people still continuing to just yap about it like I normally would, but I feel absolutely, utterly tongue-tied. I don't know what to say. I've been sitting for 2 weeks going, what am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to make a video about? What people are like, make a sketch about this, make a scene about this. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm not there yet. I'm sure I will be eventually. But I was literally sitting around today and I was like, what should I do? And I thought, I guess I'll do a podcast. And I had several different topics that I thought of maybe exploring. And I just was like, I don't feel any of them strongly enough. So I think we're going to do something different today. We're going to do something kind of novel. Normally on the podcast, when it's just me, I sort of have a topic that I riff on for like 30 to 40 minutes. And then I turn it over to our live studio audience on TikTok. We are live on TikTok right now. We've got about 170. We're going between 170 and a little over 200 people in our live studio audience. And normally after I'm done doing my yap session, I turn it over to the comments and I do kind of whatever they want to talk about, whatever my yapping made them want to hear me yap about. And I thought, what if we do a show that's just oops all comments, just oops all TikTok, all live studio audience, because I don't know what to say. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I don't have the solution. I have thoughts. I have feelings. I have opinions. I don't know how to put them into words right now. Maybe they'll come out easier if I let myself be led by the TikTok comment section. So this is on y'all. What would you like to talk about today? TikTok studio audience, I'm turning it over to you. What should we talk about today on the podcast? McMuffin asks, what are your thoughts on moving away from identity politics? I saw somebody say this on Threads. I think it was that political dude who's a guy I follow on TikTok as well. And he was like, hey, let's knock it off with the bullshit. The right is playing identity politics too. They always have been. Like, they love to throw around words like DEI and all this, you know, they create boogeymen out of these three syllable things, whether it's SEL, social and emotional learning, CRT, critical race theory, DEI, whatever it is, all these things, these concepts that they don't actually understand, and they play identity politics all the time. The entire idea of like conventional gender ideology, that there's only two genders and we really need to get back to men being real men, and real men is always code for like white men, and it's always code for white Christian men, and it's so apparent in who they prop up as their societal leaders and who they prop up as the voices that they should, that we should all listen to, the voices of reason in right-leaning media, that it's this decidedly white Christian male voice, and it's so fundamentally rooted in the principle of identity, that like the identity politics we should all be adhering to is that the identity of the white straight Christian male is the natural born identity of the leader of the, of, you know, the free world. That's who we should be following. That's who should be dictating what society looks like. And it's just, you know, it's the voice of the status quo. But make no mistake, like, these people are not the anti-identity politics political option. They never have been. Running on a platform about, you know, calling a black woman who's running for president a DEI candidate, and running on a platform where you're trying to call her unqualified when she's going up against maybe the worst presidential candidate in the history of American politics, with a vice presidential candidate who has no experience, and calling her unexperienced up against them, and now he's appointing, you know, Fox News hosts as a Fox News weekend host as the Secretary of Defense, and RFK as the health czar, and we want to talk about qualifications. It never was about qualifications. It was always about identity. So this question of what do you think about moving away from identity politics, as though it's the fault of the left that the American political conversation has been too steeped in identity in the 21st century. The phenomenon of identity politics is just as much a result of right-wing bigotry as it is of anything else. In fact, it is the result of that. Like, the only reason why we ever have to focus on identity and talk about, this trans person got elected in this district, and that's a big deal because this district is historically very bigoted toward queer people. The only reason why we even need to make it a thing, why it even needs to be a revolutionary concept to run on a ticket where you are a woman of color, a trans woman, a trans person at all, a queer person at all, the only reason why the identity has ever mattered is because it is a reaction to right-wing bigotry. It always has been a reaction to right-wing identity politics. I think the left would be perfectly happy to not have to run on principles of, you know, this, we should consider this candidate because they exist in X marginalized identity. But those identities would not be marginalized, and it would not be a novel thing worth fighting for if we weren't up against right-wing bigotry. So that's my thoughts on identity politics and on why I don't know that it makes sense for the left to try to move away from it. This person asks me, are you joining Chorus? I have no idea what that is, and I don't think I want to know. I don't think I want to know. I'm probably going to find out against my will. It sounds like it's another social media app. And God damn it, I didn't want to join Blue Sky. But there I am. And here's the thing about Blue Sky. Look, for all of its flaws, like, here's the thing. Is it better than X and Threads? No. Is it, but does it look better? That's the thing. And the answer to that is also no. But, do you get a multifaceted experience where you're getting lots of different viewpoints? Absolutely not. But here's the actual thing, is it's worse, is the thing. And that's better because it's new and it's bad. And they're all bad. But I it's a day on Blue Sky and I'm like, what? Everyone's like, it's so great. And I'm like, y'all, we already have this and it's bad. And this is worse. We have this and it sucks. And having just that but worse, I don't know. Here we go. DJ Grommet says, what would you do to make a better social media site? First of all, Blue Sky, if you're listening, let me pick whatever username I want. You know, like, my username across all platforms is yourpal_Austin, for better or worse. I'm not sure if I like that username. It's just become associated with the brand that I've built online, but it's unanimous across all platforms. X, Threads, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, your pal underscore Austin. The word your pal, all is one word, little space, little break, Austin. And that's what it is on all of them. Whether I want it to be or not, that's what it is. And I can't have that on Blue Sky because not only will they not allow me to have an underscore in my username, they require my username to be yourpalaustin.bsky, not Blue Sky, bsky, hate that, dot social. Like if my username on YouTube was yourpalaustin.ytube.videos, that sucks. So first of all, just let me pick my username and let me have the same. Let's make sure that the username interface coding works the same on our platform as it does elsewhere so that there can be unanimity and uniformity across the different platforms. Second of all, every social media platform in existence now, whether we want it to be or not, is a video platform. You need to have your video sharing software up to par with the other platforms. Not only does Blue Sky only allow 60-second videos, hey, we're past that, we're done with that, but also like the video quality is bad. It's bad. So it's like, hey, it's already bad that the homogenization of social media platforms, that they're all becoming the same thing. But if they're all going to be the same thing, don't just have yours be a worse version. So I think that you could make an argument that says, well, if you don't like the homogenization of social media, then shouldn't you want something like Blue Sky that's doing something a little bit different? Here's the problem with Blue Sky. They're not doing something different. They're doing the same thing, just worse. And so my thing is like, hey, I'm all for someone doing something different. When TikTok first blew up, it was because this was a novel concept, this scrolling feed of endless videos that were catered to what you were responding to, the discoverability had never really, you'd never seen anything like this. There was the YouTube landing page that still exists, where YouTube sort of populates your homepage with things that are similar to what you already watch, and you can discover new channels that way, and it's a mixture of new channels and channels you're already subscribed to. But this feed, this For You page feature that TikTok had, was completely revolutionary in terms of making it just the ability for new creators to build audiences and for people to discover new creators, because it was so easy to follow too. It's like you're watching a video and the follow button's right there on the video. You can tap that just as easily as you can tap the like button. And it was really something that was novel in the video social media space, the video content creation space. They started off with a 60-second time limit, eventually went up to a 90-second limit, then went up to like 3 minutes. And now I think people can make videos that are like 30, 40 minutes on TikTok. I don't. I still view TikTok as inherently best when it's under 10 minutes. I think inherently TikTok should be a video platform that is for shorter concepts. You know, I think a minute to 2 minutes is a great length for a TikTok. But if you're going to get a little wordier, which sometimes I like to, I don't think you should go longer than like 6 or 7 minutes. That's just me personally. I think if you're going to go above 10 minutes, make that thing live on YouTube. That's what YouTube's for. It's for longer videos. I think I'm bummed out that Instagram is no longer a place for photos. You can still do carousels and stuff like that on Instagram, but like Instagram, we used to have a very, you know, everything was separate, right? Long form videos and video content, YouTube. Blurbs and the written word, that was Twitter. Then you had Instagram, that was for photos. That's, you know, a glimpse into my life. Maybe like short videos that were sort of like Vines back in the day. And then you had TikTok, which was like this new kind of fusion of video content with this For You page and all this stuff. But now they're all just TikTok. Now, you know, Instagram, Reddit, Twitter, even Threads. Like Threads is more of Twitter than than Twitter is now. Threads is more what Twitter used to be. And then Blue Sky is just the worst version of what Threads is and what Twitter used to be. But they're all still video platforms that need to be able to be a home for video content and need to work as that. So anyway, this question was, what would I do to build a better social media site? And I guess my answer is just like something else. I don't know what it is. That's not the way my brain works. I'm not an entrepreneur, but something else. Not just the same thing, but worse. Something else. They're all becoming the same app. So somebody's got to like figure out what the next thing is and do it, do something different that's cool somehow. But I don't know if we're going to get that. Is this the same guy who made the pandemic song in 2020? I'm not sure which one you're talking about, but I did make several pandemic songs in 2020. I did the I'm vaxxed, waxed, wearing slacks, going on TikTok, dropping facts. The CDC says, hey, you can relax, but when I go out, I still rock a mask. Cause I don't want to be, cause I don't want to be mistaken for a Trump supporter. And I did write that song. I don't know if that's the song you're referring to, but I did do a lot of pandemic related content in 2020. And a lot of lampooning of conservatives who suddenly, for no reason, out of nowhere, just decided that masks weren't a thing that had been used for the last 100 years, and that masks were not an effective way of limiting the spread of airborne diseases, even though healthcare professionals had been wearing masks to limit the spread of airborne pathogens for 100 years. And yeah, that was, and now those people are running the government. And isn't that great? And Robert Kennedy, who doesn't believe in vaccines, is going to be in charge of public health. And that's so cool for us. And I'm totally cool with it. And let's see what else people want to talk about. Brat Sounds asks, or says, feels like nobody on the left knows how to react yet. At what point will we know? Like I said, a lot of my cohorts and colleagues on the left are definitely offering up their takes and their responses to what is to the unfolding situation that has been kind of, revealing itself over the last 2 weeks. And there are definitely a lot of takes to be had and a lot of opinions to be shared and a lot of blame to be posited and laid on different parties. But I also think that in general, most people are just grasping at straws and we don't actually know what the next move should be or how to respond. And this question of when will we know, I don't know. There's a lot of things that like, there's a big part of me that's sort of like, all I can do now is just sit back and watch. I also know that that's an irresponsible thing to say as a person with a platform. I need to be advocating for people to get into direct action. I need to be advocating for people to like, not waste time and to get up and, not just feel sorry for themselves, but like figure out how to organize in this new dynamic and what it's going to look like to oppose the Trump administration and the incoming plague that Project 2025 is going to bring with it. And, Alex Perlman said something the other day where he was like, I just want to say we told you so. And I get that too, that it's just like, yeah, we did. We told you Project 2025. And people were like, well, he said that he doesn't know what that is. And we were like, well, he's a liar who lies about everything. Remember that? How he's never told the truth about anything in his life. So if he says he doesn't know what Project 2025 is, and also we have him on stage saying the Heritage Foundation are going to be the people who are going to write the agenda for my next administration, and the Heritage Foundation wrote Project 2025, I think we can put two and two together that is what they're actually planning on doing. And now they're all just openly being like, you idiots, Project 2025 was the plan all along. And we're like, no, we know, dipshits. Like, we know that. We were never tricked. I guess some people were. I guess enough people were that this happened. The question was, when will we know? A lot of this stuff is like, we're going to know when we know. I'm writing this show right now that's going to take place next summer. It's a theatrical show that has a lot of political satire in it. And I'm writing it for this theater company. And a lot of the show is just like political commentary and political satire. And one of the things that I've been talking with the theater company about is like, well, we'll only know certain things when we know them. And so like we're writing like kind of placeholders, like Donald Trump shows up and talks about blank, like whatever the thing is that he's going to do. And Elon Musk shows up and they have an interaction about blank, which is whatever thing is going to happen. I do think it's going to be really interesting to monitor the evolution of their relationship and the evolution of, the you know, Donald Trump has already sort of filled his cabinet with a lot of kind of high level narcissists. I think that he surrounded himself with a lot more low level sycophantic people his first time as president. And he wound up, you know, as we all remember, firing all of the, like, he just was replacing people in his cabinet, like, every few weeks. Like, he had, I don't know, like, six press secretaries while he was president the first time, because he kept firing them and putting in someone else. And he would always hire these sort of, like, low-level sycophantic people that were just trying to suck up to him and do whatever they could to suckle at the teat of the Trump political machine. But it's weird. He's surrounding himself with a lot more people who have their own sort of, like, political atmosphere and gravitational pull and their own sort of like narcissistic world built around them. And it'll be really interesting to see how all of those narcissistic egos clash and what kind of hell that can sort of wreak on his second administration. It'll be interesting to watch nonetheless, but absolutely as a responsible platform haver, I should be advocating, and I am officially advocating for, like, don't wait, figure out a way to get involved at your local level, figure out how to organize, figure out what you can get involved in personally. Don't just wait for midterms, find out if there's a way that you can be involved from the jump, that we can spend this entire 4 years fighting. It's hard for me to say that because I'm very tired, because, I just worked my ass off on the 2024 election, and I'm very tired. And I think that's part of why I've been sort of in this 2 week daze, is I'm just like, I don't know what to do now, but I'm going to get back to work. And I think it's just the gearing up. It's the, like, girding my loins and reaching down deep and being like, okay, well, the work continues, and I'm going to have to continue what's frustrating is knowing that I'm going to spend the next 4 years having a lot of the same arguments. There are going to be, like, more mass shootings, and I'm going to have to, like, have the same arguments where people are going to be like, man, we just need better security in schools. And, like, under a Trump administration, maybe they'll even do it. They'll be like, hey, we got schools with one door in and out, and that door has these crazy locks that the second there's a shooter inside the school, it triggers this locking mechanism that, like, nobody can open up. And it's like, yeah, that's not good. Because then everyone's just locked inside the school with the shooter, right? And they're like, yeah, but maybe, who knows? And we're going to have to, like, do that again and again and again for the next 4 years. And there's going to be, like, you know, states that are going to pass anti-trans legislation that's going to be targeted at, like, two kids in the entire state who are trying to play volleyball or something, and they're gonna be like, that kid can't play volleyball because they have an unfair biological advantage, so we need to mandate that gender affirming care is outlawed in the entire state. And we're gonna have to, like, have the exact same conversations about how biological advantages in sports is just something that exists in sports, that, like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, who's 7'2 and weighed over 300 pounds when he was playing in the NBA, has a biological advantage over Spud Webb, who was 5'3 and weighed like 130 pounds when he played in the NBA. And they just had to figure out a way to be competitive against each other in the same sport, because that's just how fucking sports work. And we're going to have to, like, have all of those same conversations again and again and again and again and again. I'm just getting ready for that, and getting ready for, you know, explaining, like, vaccine science, like having doctors and scientists on my podcast to explain again how vaccines work, and explain again why vaccines are safe and effective, and why they're this kind of medical miracle that we're so lucky to have. And it just feels like, you know, like having to continually explain to people that the Earth is an oblate spheroid and not a flat terrarium. And yeah, that's what we're gearing up for. We're just gearing up to have all of the exact same arguments with all of the exact same morons who somehow in 2024 haven't yet heard the well-worn out rejoinders to all of their terrible positions. Ocean Pete Pumpkin For Real says, don't forget the locker rooms and showers. Oh, okay to let that random dude in there, huh? Oh my God. Yeah. I love when conservative people show up in my comments to do the exact thing that I'm talking about them doing in real time. That it's like, yeah, absolutely. Let's have this exact same conversation again, as though this isn't well-worn territory, that as though this conversation hasn't already been had 1,000 different times on 1,000 different YouTube channels, on a million different podcasts, and been thoroughly debunked so many times. Let's just do it. Like, this is the first time anyone's ever made this argument. What if there's a scary guy that goes into the wrong bathroom? Hey, did you know that that can happen whether you're banning trans people from bathrooms or not? And did you know that the vast majority of sexual predators in the world are cisgender men, and they're just going to do that whether they're allowed to be in there or not? That cisgender men who are sexual predators are not dissuaded from being sexual predators because the law says you're not allowed to go into that bathroom? Holy shit. Oh boy. Isn't this going to be fun? This is going to be so fun. We get to do this for at least another 4 years, probably longer, but at least another 4 years, we get to have this conversation still. We get to inform somebody who apparently has just never had it explained to them that, like, hey, sexual predators are going to be sexual predators. It doesn't matter whether you write legislation that is discriminatory against trans people or not. They're just going to do what they do. And you writing legislation that dehumanizes and marginalizes trans people won't stop that from happening. Also, just every single time, you know, we have an instance of somebody being assaulted in a public space, it's always a male. It's always a cisgender man. Often it's a white, straight Christian man. How many times do we need to see stories where people are like, oh, once again, it's like a youth pastor who did it, not a drag queen, not a trans person. So, you know, I don't know. Like, yeah, trans people should be allowed to use the bathroom that they're going to be safest in because they deserve safety like everybody else. And they're not sexual predators. The idea that people are transitioning just so that they can go into the other bathroom and do sexually deviant stuff is an inherently bigoted idea and concept. And there is no evidential basis for this concept. There is not like this long litany of cases of people who went through medical transition just so that they could become sexual predators. There is no basis for that. There is, however, a long, well-recorded, well-documented history of straight white Christian men using their powers of authority to positions of authority to entrap and ensnare children. And whoo boy, I just, oh my God, we're so lucky that we get to have all these same conversations again and just keep doing it ad nauseum. I think this is why I get a little bit like, I don't know what to say, because I feel like I've already said everything I could possibly say about all of these topics 50 times in different videos, in different podcast episodes. And I just feel like I feel like the body of work that I've assembled over the last 5 years, it's all been said many, many, many times. And there's no new ground to tread. The only thing we're left with is like, so many people just refuse to engage with good information. They just would rather watch Joe Rogan fumble through the same stupid conspiracy theories and ideas and watch Jake Paul be Jake Paul. And they would rather do that. Oh, Ocean Pumpkin for Real's back. You can say all you want, but you don't know how to have a discussion and actually listen to someone. I wonder, Ocean Pumpkin, if you actually listen to any of the words that I just said. This is my show where I'm the host and we are doing Oops All Comments. This is the episode we're doing it. Like I'm responding to comments, but I wonder if in your, you know, if you actually listen to anything that I just said. I wonder if you actually thought to yourself while I was on that screed, oh, good point. Oh, interesting. I'd never considered that. Or if you just were like, well, I still want to say the thing I want to say, even though the thing I want to say is so stupid and wrong and bad and is a thing that bigots have been saying for a very long time, stupidly and wrongly and badly, and has been debunked so many times. You just are like, but I want to say the thing I want to say. I want to save, I want to regurgitate the same stupid idea that I want to regurgitate. And it doesn't occur to you, maybe you should shut up and just like listen and be like, oh, geez, not only has this person already heard the idea that I want to share with them, they've already heard it a million times, it's nothing new, but also they're actually refuting it quite well, quite roundly. I'll forever subscribe here. I love you, says McMuffin. Thank you very much. Also, follow me on YouTube if you're not already. Subscribe over there. Subscribe to my Patreon if you want to keep this party rolling. If you want to help me keep doing this work, which I've got to keep doing for the next 4 years at least. If you want to help out, subscribe to my Patreon. There's exclusive content over there that you don't get anywhere else. Yeah, but check out the YouTube. You got the video version of the podcast. You got lots of fun stuff over there. Let's go back and see. I don't want to listen to Ocean Pumpkin anymore. Let's Giggly Diggly says, why 4 years? That's kind of just a joke where I'm just saying, like, I got to have the same conversations that I'm having with people like Ocean Pumpkin for at least the next 4 years while Trump is in office. And there was some naive part of me that was sort of looking forward to being like, maybe we can advance the discussion. Maybe we can move on and move into new territory if Kamala Harris wins. Maybe we can have more in-depth, nuanced discussions about how to actually implement policies that could begin to craft a better society moving forward, and a safer society, a more equitable society, a more just society. And we could begin to have those conversations rather than just trying to have to explain to people like Ocean Pumpkin why their ideas about trans people in bathrooms are stupid. But no, we're going to continue having the conversation about trans people in bathrooms, because that's the legislation we're going to be combating. We're not going to be having legislation about like what form of gender affirming care, you know, is the best or safest, you know, or like, you know, having conversations about the gender spectrum and about the reality of gender and about the human condition. We're going to be having conversations about legislation written by people who have never allowed themselves to actually consider the possibility that trans people are just real people who exist based on the evidence that they just are. And so we have to deal with that legislation. And that's the fight that we're going to be fighting for at least another 4 years. That's why I said the four-year thing. Lenny Joe asks, how do you feel about Oklahoma buying Trump Bibles to teach in schools? I just feel so great about it. Apparently, I heard this from somebody the other day. Apparently that's being blocked, or there's efforts being taken to block that. That's a thing. If you want to know how to get involved, maybe look into blocking the Trump Bibles being put in Oklahoma public schools. But yeah, this is a thing. There's this Oklahoma senator who's really excited about getting the Bible back in schools, who swears that American education went downhill after we removed the Bible from schools, and that the solution to America's education problem is to put the Bible back in schools, and not just the Bible, but the Trump-specific Bible. And again, yeah, this sucks. It sucks so much that this is the fight that we're now fighting. It sucks so much that protest voters and third-party voters wanted to have this fight. Instead of having a fight where we're like, how can we pressure the Biden Wall or the Harris Walls administration to sever its ties with Israel and to find a way out of the AIPAC alliance and to appropriately respond to the genocide in Gaza. Instead of having that conversation and that fight, we've got to have a conversation about whether or not the American education system would be better if Trump Bibles were mandatory parts of public school curriculum. To everyone that basically said that they didn't see any meaningful distinction between the two options on offer in the 2024 election, I just like, hey, fuck you, man. You suck, and you did this to us, and you were wrong. You were wrong. You were so wrong. You were so incredibly wrong. You are still wrong. And now because of you, we get to live in this world. We get to have that conversation instead about like, hey, does the Bible in schools, particularly the Trump Bible, will that help American education? The answer is no, because this is, and again, boy, this is, you know, atheism for beginners. This is just like crash course atheism 101, YouTube atheism 101. What the Bible is, and this is what any Christian scholar, any biblical scholar is aware of, anybody who has a PhD in you know, the Bible or the study of the Bible, biblical academia is aware of this. This is not just like atheist conspiracy theory. This is what the Bible literally is it is a text written by multiple authors over a span of hundreds of years and then retranslated over a span of thousands of years by innumerable people. Just so many different councils of people, in different clergy people, in different regions of the world, retranslating and changing and altering and amending this document that was already written by multiple people in through this game of like hundreds of, you know, centuries long game of telephone, and then retranslated and retranslated and retranslated, and somehow landing at the King James version of the Bible, which is the version of the Bible that most American Christians use, even though they don't realize that even that version has been retranslated as recently as the 20th century several times. It's been retranslated several times in the 20th century. And they think that this text is an immovable, unshakable, infallible version of the mind and will of Almighty God. That contained in this text is the mind of God, of the creator of the universe, that to understand the order of the universe and how things are supposed to work and the history of life on earth and the origins of life on earth, it's all contained inside of this book. And they believe that the words of this book are perfect and cannot be, you know, transgressed against. And they believe this while knowing everything that I just said, while knowing that it is a book that was written by multiple authors over hundreds of years and then retranslated innumerable times over the course of thousands of years to the point where we have no idea what the original form of this book actually said, because it's been retranslated that many times. And people are like, but it's still the unchangeable word of God, and children in elementary schools should be taught the Trump version of this book, Jesus Christ. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. I don't even have like a way to finish. It's just so stupid. Does that make sense what I'm saying? It's so stupid. It's so stupid. I can't, like, there's no analogy. There's no, it's just like the actual thing that it is the dumbest thing I can think of. And it's actually what we're up against. It's actually what is happening in the world is people are just like, this magic book is magic and the kids are dumb because they don't have the magic book. Even though the dumbest people in the country are all of the people who love the magic book. They're the stupidest people in the world. And they're like, we can fix the education system by making everyone as dumb as us. Anyway, those are my thoughts on the Trump Bible being put into public schools in Oklahoma. And that being a thing that was that's happening not 2 weeks after Trump was named president-elect of the United States. So let's go back to the comments, shall we? Somebody said, you talking about HP? I do love using that example all the time when theists and believers try to use the Bible to prove the legitimacy of the Bible. I always am like, I co-host this show called The Line on YouTube with my friend Forrest Whitaker from time to time. It's a skeptic call-in show where believers call in and try to stump us. And 98% of the calls that show receives are people calling in with Bible verses that prove that the Bible is true. They're like, well, it says right here in this book in the Bible that God would never lie to us in the Bible, and that's why the Bible is the Bible. And it's like, yeah. And the amount of times I've had to explain to people, you can't use the book to prove that the book is the true word of God. I can't just open up Harry Potter and read to you from Harry Potter and say, says right here that if I go to this train station and I go to a brick wall between platforms 9 and 10, that I'll arrive at a platform called 9¾, and I can get on the Hogwarts Express and go to Hogwarts. It says it right there in this book written by this bigot whose brain has been turned to mush by black mold. It says it right there in the book. So how could that be not true? And this is like the fact that you have to explain to people that just because a book says so doesn't mean that it's actual reality. Again, it's so stupid. It's so stupid. Somebody asked, were you raised LDS? I sure was. Yeah, Taya Westcott asked. Westcott, in fact, not only was I raised LDS, but my mother's maiden name is Westcott. My whole mother's side of the family are the Westcotts. And that is an LDS name, as far as I know. What the Westcotts have an LDS tradition going back some ways. But I was raised LDS, and boy, that's a fun mythology and history to get into as well. And again, it's just one of those things where it's like people are fully aware of this history, and they're like, yeah, that's how I think it happened. And when South Park says dumb, 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 it's like, yeah, yeah, guys. Yup. But you know, whatever. LDS people are nice. My family's LDS, and somebody just asked, what's LDS? That's the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It is an iteration of American Christianity that was founded in the 1830s. They don't like the word founded because they like the word restored, as though this gospel already existed, always existed, and it was restored by Joseph Smith in the 19th century. But he wrote, he translated a book that he found that was engraved on golden plates that nobody ever saw. Well, there are a few people that said in writing that they saw it, but nobody actually ever saw it other than him, and he didn't actually ever see it either, because he put the book in a hat and read it using peep stones and dictated the book out loud to someone, and that's how it was written. Impressive. Hey, impressive. Impressive. But it is just Bible fan fiction. The guy was raised with like two books in his house, the King James Bible and like one other book. He knew the Bible like the back of his hand, and he wrote, you know, a pretty impressive, it's a pretty impressive way to write a book, doing it through dictation, but not impossible at all. LDS people like to think that like the story of how it was written, like it couldn't have been done that way. It's impossible. It's like, no, it's not. Do you know people? People are incredibly creative, and especially like cult leaders, like they're incredibly good at coming up with, you know, things that look really, really impressive and cool, but aren't actually that. I mean, like people write books, you know, like people write impressive. Frank Herbert wrote Dune, and Dune's an impressive book. But it's not proof that like Frank Herbert was receiving revelation about like an actual mythical future on a planet called Arrakis. It's just an impressive work of fiction. But yeah, LDS is the Mormons, the Book of Mormon, the Mormons. They prefer to be called LDS. Their newest church president has made a mandate that he basically said that being called Mormon is a slur, that it offends Heavenly Father, and that you should call them Latter-day Saints, even though I was raised in that religion, and for my entire life, they openly identified themselves as the Mormons. Their book is the Book of Mormon. They had their website for the longest time was Mormon.org. They had to change that. They had entire ad campaigns that said, we are the Mormons. And then one guy was like, I don't think we should be called that. And now it's like a slur to call them that, even though that's what they called themselves. But anyway, whatever, out of respect for my family and my friends, I try to remember to call them the LDS faith, the Latter-day Saints. Let's see here. Amanda says rebranding. Yeah, definitely. And then Alter292 says, wait, but LDS is only a sect of Mormonism. Correct, you are. Mormonism itself has different factions and iterations and sects. As young of a religion as it is, it already has branched off into different sects. And that's what religions do, right? Is like they spur different aberrations and iterations and sects. They all do that. They all have different movements within them that are practicing at different levels along, you know, a spectrum. And That's just sort of like the nature of religion, is it evolves, it changes, it morphs, the same as the Bible. So it's so weird that there's this sort of, there's this fundamental duality that for anyone who's willing to be intellectually honest about it, should cause a great deal of cognitive dissonance, wherein you believe that you have access to some kind of foundational, eternal, immovable, unchangeable truth that cannot be shaken, that does not change with the times, that is rock solid, but also you're part of a thing that is like this living, breathing organism that is constantly changing, that's constantly rebranding itself, that's constantly coming up with new rules and new ideas, and new sects and offshoots are starting. And you're aware of both of this, but you also believe that it's this immovable, unchanging, eternal container for these, like, these cosmic doctrines that dictate the entire universe. And that's, you know, science doesn't work that way. It doesn't have these, like, built-in foundational contradictions. Like, the laws of physics, we know they work because, like, the reason why we know the Big Bang is the Big Bang is because, like, math works. And math works forwards and backwards, and we can track it back. We can, like, do carbon dating, and we can use math to just track back the age of things, and it works all the way back. Like, the foundational principles of gravity and the math of gravity, it works when we apply it to figuring out where different objects are in the celestial space around us, in you know, and it actually is solid and reliable. And if it changes, if we discover something that changes it, that changes our understanding of it, we adjust the model to that new thing that we have discovered, and we apply that thing, and we only know that that thing actually works if it plugs in and applies the same way and can work, you know, across all of these different equations. But yeah, I'm getting way down. I mean, this is the point of this episode, right? I'm just letting the comments put an idea in my head, and then I'm just yapping about it. Cloud Control just says, physics don't care about your faith. Yeah, pretty much, you know. Ocean Pumpkin's still in here. Ocean Pumpkin's like talking to somebody in the comments. They just said, I don't disparage liberals that are good folks and reasonable, but many are not, sadly. The projection of this person, first of all, saying, like, that I don't know how to have a conversation and listen. Like, we're not having a conversation. I'm just sort of getting prompts from the comments, and then I'm being the host of the show that I'm the host of. And second of all, like, the fact that, like, you're very clearly not listening to anything that anybody else who doesn't share your beliefs says, and then saying that liberals are, by and large, not reasonable people or, you know, logical people. My goodness. And we're literally talking about a person who probably has a belief system that is crafted by the Bible, who probably would advocate for the Trump Bible being put in public schools, talking about how, you know, liberals aren't reasonable people by and large. Yeah, and then Mary Lou says, yet we're the most educated. Yeah, and there is data that supports this, that, like, the higher a person's education goes, the more education that they have, the more left they lean politically. We have clear data supporting that, like, and the political parties are aware of this. Like, the Republican Party targets people who are uneducated. They go after people who have a lower level of education. They like their followers to be uninformed, uneducated, and stupid. They openly say this, and the people who vote for them are stupid enough that they're like, that's fine by me. You know, like, that's the cool thing about having followers who are stupid, is you can kind of just, like, say whatever and get away with it. You can just do whatever. And that's cool. Cloud Control says, I just want to say I love your videos and thank you. I think this stuff has real value. I appreciate you saying that. Sometimes I don't know. And I don't know, the last couple weeks I've been a little bit, like, just sort of down, and, like, I don't know if what I'm doing means anything, because I'm so aware that, like, even though I do have people like you occasionally come to me and say this has meaning to me, on election day, I was at the store and I was buying treats because I had friends coming over to sort of, like, we were gonna, like, have, like, a self-care day, and this woman came up to me and was like, hey, I don't normally stop people in public, but I just wanted to tell you that your work means a lot to me. It's very cathartic for me. And also I've used a lot of arguments from your channel in conversations with like my father, and it's helped him understand me better. And like those interactions are very, very valuable to me and like mean a lot and keep me going. But also I'm so aware of just like how small my influence is when compared to someone like Jake Paul or, you know, Andrew Tate or Joe Rogan or Matt Walsh or Ben Shapiro or any of those people, or Nick Fuentes. Like, Nick Fuentes has more influence over the cultural conversation than I do by orders of magnitude. And it's hard not to fall into despair when you consider that, when it's like, hey, I might have my own little corner here who I am helping in my own little way, and I might be providing something useful for them, but does it actually matter in a world of 8 billion people where, in a country of 350 million people, where my relative share of the market of, you know, of the discourse market is so imperceivably small? And I don't know. People are saying in the comments, it does, you know, and Kat says, those people are exactly why we need you to keep going. I know, I get all that, and I'm going to continue, and thank you for the encouragement. But yeah, it is, it's tough. I don't know how to compete. The money that they have is so crazy. It's so, and again, like, I just think that, like, connecting with an audience when your product is like really dumb and simple and stupid, it seems to be the way to go. It seems like throughout history, it was the way to go. Like, it seems like it's always been the better move to just have a more watered down, more easily digestible message and brand. I was even thinking like today about like, I've sort of made it my brand over the years that like, I refuse to commit to a niche. On all of my platforms, I've just refused to commit to a niche, and much to my detriment, you know, like, and I get how this is problematic, because even me as a consumer of content, I like knowing what I'm going to get from the different people that I follow. I follow different people for a very specific reason. It's like, I follow this page because I like their sketch comedy, and that's what I'm here for, is like good sketches. I don't want to hear anything else from them. You know, when I'm watching like Forrest Valkai's YouTube channel, thank you so much, whoever sent the money gun, thank you very much. But when I'm watching Forrest Valkai's YouTube channel and he's doing Reacteria, I know that I'm watching my friend Forrest, who is an evolutionary biologist, and he's going to be debunking bad arguments from creationists and offering them actual real substantive science. And that's what I go to Forrest for. And if I went to Forrest's channel and he said, hey, everybody, watch this new music video that I directed and choreographed and that I danced in, I'd be like, what? Forrest is dancing in music videos now? Why? Or if I went to the Vlog Brothers and they were all of a sudden like, we're going to do sketch comedy this week, we're just going to start doing sketch comedy, I'd be like, that's not what the Vlog Brothers do. That's not why I follow the Vlog Brothers. And so I know that like following me is weird, because you'll arrive at my page and be like, oh, cool, like some biting political satire. But then all of a sudden there'll be a video that's not funny at all, and it's just me doing like a very direct address to the camera, just breaking down a political concept very seriously. And it's like, oh, okay, that one wasn't really that funny, but still useful. And then the next day I'm doing sketch comedy with my friends Colin and Kara, and it's like, oh, I guess he's also like doing comedy. Okay. And then the next day I'm just dancing at Millennium Studio. And it's like, is he a dancer? Is that what he's doing? And then the next day I'm like playing an original song on my guitar and being like, I wrote this song. And you're like, hey, dude, shut up. Like, just do one thing. Do one thing, please. And I've sort of just built my brand around like, no, I do all of these things, so I'm going to do them. And that's hard. It's a hard sell, I think, to keep people engaged, because I think that a lot of people are like, I'm mostly just here for the political takes, or I'm mostly just here for the comedy, or I'm, you know, whatever it is. And then they have to sort of sift through all of my different kinds of content to get to the kind that speaks to them the most. Let's see what else the comments want me to talk about. Brandon Cook says, I think it's cool that you do so many different things. I think it's cool too. Somebody said earlier, let your ego die or let your ego go. And I don't know if they were responding to what I was saying, but that did get into my brain. And I was like, maybe that's the thing, is like, I just need to get my ego out of it and be like, I'm trying to show everybody all these different things that I do, that I like doing. I love making music. I love dancing. I love choreographing videos and directing videos. And I want to share that with my audience. But that's not why the majority of people who follow me are here. Like, they're not here because of the hobbies that I enjoy. They're here to get my socio-political commentary. I think most of them. And maybe I just need to get my ego out of the equation and just be like, okay, I'm just going to give you what you're here for. You know, like Don Lemon might write songs. Who knows? He might be a great songwriter, but he's just doing Don Lemon stuff. Like, he's like, I'm just going to deliver the news. That's my job as a media personality. And maybe I just need to accept the fact that for the most part, I do socio-political commentary. And that's mostly what most of my audience seems to come to my channel for. Taya Westcott, my maybe distant cousin, who knows, says, thoughts on Utah culture, politics, religion, etc. It's definitely an interesting place. I don't live there for a reason. There's not a lot of states like it in the United States. A state that is fully bought and paid for and owned by one religion. There's not a lot of things like that, you know? It's a very interesting concept for a state. I feel it when I'm there, and I don't really like the way it feels. I feel the oppressive eyes of the prevailing culture. And it's weird to talk about this because, like I said, many of my closest friends, and indeed my family members who I love, are a part of this community and a part of this culture. And I love these people, and I do have genuine affection for them, and I do care about them, but I also find many of the ways that they have chosen to structure their culture and their society to be really harmful and regressive, particularly to the people who don't so easily fit into it on the outset. So people who naturally find themselves marginalized from LDS culture as an effect of their identity, queer people, even people of color, even to a certain extent, disabled people, people who don't so easily just fit the mold of what that culture wants you to be, the way that they've sort of outlined how they want life to go for people there can be really harmful. Or just people who, like, you know, are naturally predisposed to want to, like, formulate their own path and their own way through life, it's going to be really hard because, you know, one of the interesting things about, like, when I go home to Utah is I am so instantly aware of how different I am from everyone that I grew up with, because all of the people that I grew up with and all of my friends from high school all followed a blueprint that was offered to us by that culture. And it's, you know, you graduate high school, you go to maybe a year of college, maybe you don't, you go on a mission for 2 years, you come home, you get married as quickly as possible, and you start pumping out kids, and you go get a job that has a solid salary and health insurance, and you buy a home. And so everybody that I know there that I grew up with has multiple children, they're homeowners, and they're all married, and they all have been married for the last 10 to 15 years. And I go there, and I'm 36 years old. I've never been married. I've never had kids. I've never owned a home. I've never had the same job for, like, longer than a year. You know, like, my job security is constantly all over the place. I'm constantly changing who I'm employed by at different times. You know, being a professional actor and being, like, a person who works in show business, I have good years and bad years. And my life is just so very different from theirs at the level of, like, my personal experience of adulthood and my cultural experience. And I feel like such a pariah when I'm in that culture. I feel like I messed up and like I made decisions that resulted in me having a worse life than them. But then I come to LA, and being 36 and never married and never having kids and never owning a home is not weird at all in LA. In fact, I know so many people in their mid-30s who are in my exact same situation, who are in show business and, you know, up and down when it comes to how they're doing financially on a year-to-year basis, and who have the same kind of experience with adulthood that I have. And I match the cultural norms of LA much better than I match the cultural norms of Utah. But I still go back to Utah regularly because many of my favorite people in the world live there, and I have to go there to see them. Eddie Walls says, I totally get that. Similar aspect to small town living. They all follow the same structure. And yeah, like, there's a reason for this. The structure works for the most part. Like I said, to people who naturally easily fall into the mold of what prevailing mainstream LDS culture wants from you, this blueprint will work. Like, if you go on your mission, come home, get married to the first nice person that you meet, start having kids, and get a job that has a decent salary and, you know, the ability to kind of like climb the ladder and get benefits, you can have like a really solid middle class lovely life, a nice little house with a family and children that you're taking care of. And like, you get to watch these kids grow up and be responsible for them. And like, that's a really beautiful thing. And so there's an inherent logic to why people do it. They see it working for the generations before them and they go, so I'll just kind of follow that. It's the same sort of reason why like many young women just go, I think I'm just going to try to marry well, because you see that working. Like, if I just marry a man who's got a good job and wants to take care of me and I just sort of, you know, raise the kids, that's not a bad gig for me. I don't really have to worry about like what it is I want to be from a career standpoint. I can just put my focus into being a nurturing and caring partner and mother. And that's not a bad thing. That is not a bad thing to aspire to be. That is a noble thing to aspire to be. But it also is like, it's a narrative and a structure that is sort of offered to you as like a tried and true blueprint and format that you can follow. And for a lot of people, they're like, yeah, why would I aberrate from this? Like, if it works, I'm going to, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. But for people like me, and for a lot of people, I assume in my audience, we always sort of wanted to find our own way, or we had career aspirations that didn't match that blueprint, or, you know, we had ideas of our own identity and who we were that didn't fit into that blueprint. We had, we discovered a sexuality that didn't fit into that blueprint. And so we decided to go find a different way of doing it, a different experience with adulthood. And those are usually people who wind up leaving their hometown and going and living in some larger populated metropolitan area and developing their own community and their own sense of family and their own sense of like what it means to be a successful adult. And I don't necessarily think that there's anything like better or worse about either experience. I think they're just different. And they both have their own perks and they both have their own drawbacks. And there's definitely trade-offs with each. My name is JB says, then there's dangerous people who should have never followed that blueprint for the sake of their family. And that's true as well. There's also people who are going to use that blueprint to as a means to like abuse and inflict harm on other people. There are definitely a lot of men in particular who are going to use the inherently patriarchal structure of those blueprints to kind of, have power over a family structure and implement that power. There are definitely women who are going to use that blueprint to oppose the rights of other women and other people, and who are going to use their privilege. By and large, white people, white affluent people. Alex Elko says, I have no idea what's going on, but you seem like a chill guy, and that's a cool shirt. Thank you. If you're just listening to the audio version of the podcast, I'm wearing my Chapel Roan shirt, my Legend of Zelda Chapel Roan shirt. It just says the Legend of Chapel Roan, and it looks like Zelda. You're at a live recording of my podcast. This is my podcast, People Pleaser, with Austin Archer. I'm Austin Archer. I'm the host of it. Been doing it for about 5 years. And this is an interesting episode. We just decided to do oops, all comments. And I think it went, I don't know, kind of chaotic, kind of crazy, but also kind of fine, right? This wasn't terrible. There was a lot of interesting ground covered. Is there anything else that anyone would like to talk about? We talked about Mormonism. We talked about the Bible being put in schools. We talked about what the hell are we going to do now that Trump is president again a little bit. We didn't fully get into that. We didn't talk about everything we could have talked about. We didn't talk about all the cabinet picks. We didn't talk about, I don't know, is there anything else that anyone wants to talk about? Bree Sunny says, hey, Austin, I've been loving you on the line recently. Got a lot of, apparently people like when I go do the line. When I go co-host the line with Forrest, apparently people really like that. I will say this, I wish more of the line subscribers would subscribe to me on YouTube because I see them all being like, you got to get Austin back. But I'm like, hey, come over here and subscribe to my channel. Subscribe to my YouTube channel if you haven't done that already. There's lots of good content over there. User Bunch of Numbers says, let's talk about moving to Canada. Listen, it's not out of the question. It's not, I'm not even joking. I'm not even being dramatic. It's not out of the question. This is the thing, is I've been trying to make it clear how dangerous the second Trump presidency could be and will be for the last, you know, several years, how dangerous the threat of that is. As we're just 2 weeks in, and as we're already seeing what the cabinet picks are and the things that they're talking about wanting to do at a legislative level, I genuinely think that I think there's a good chance that I downplayed how bad it will actually be in practice, that it will actually wind up being significantly worse. I don't know, like, when it comes to, like, abandoning ship and moving to Canada, I don't know. I've talked with my friends about this. I've talked with certain family members about this. And I don't know, like, when you do that. Like, do you have to do that when you sense that a civil war could begin so that you can get out before it happens and before the borders are closed? And then you run the risk of doing it preemptively and being wrong. And then it's like, oh, I moved to Canada and I didn't need to. Or do you think that, like, you can wait until it does look like all-out civil war is happening and you need to get out for your own safety? Or would you run the risk of, like, yeah, like I said, the borders being closed and you being trapped inside of this powder keg? I don't know. It's something that I genuinely think about in a serious way. Does anyone want to talk about the integrity of the 2024 election? Is anyone interested in talking about that? Does anybody have any thoughts on whether or not we can trust what just happened? Maya Reed says, in my area, hate speech has ramped up dramatically. Another yes. User Bunch of Numbers says, there is no integrity. And Rope Street Gangster says, why is it okay to do that now? I imagine this person is asking, why is it okay to question the integrity of the election now, but it wasn't okay to question the integrity of the election in 2020? I don't know if that's what that person's asking, but I think that's what that person's asking. Here's the thing. Here's what's interesting about election integrity and about whether or not we can trust the legitimacy of the 2024 election results is Donald Trump has done this really wonderful magic trick where he's managed to make anybody who questions the integrity of election results out to be some kind of conspiratorial maniac on par with people who believe that the earth is flat, people who believe in lizard people. You know, like, they've basically managed to make the idea of being an election denier on par with being anti-vax or just anti-science, anti-climate change, all of the things that they actually are, because they were also election deniers, it all gets lumped into that same category. So people on the left now, even if they feel like something is, their spidey sense is telling them something is off, they don't want to be lumped into that same category of being like a conspiratorial person who just can't take an L, who just can't accept a loss. And they're like, well, look, we don't want to be, and I see this. I see lots of left-wing people with platforms and media correspondents making posts that are like, guys, let's be better than them. Let's not be election deniers. Let's not get into that, you know, that space. We're better than them. We can accept that we just lost fair and square. And I just like, I just want to say, like, hey, absolutely. If all of the audits are done, because there will be audits done, especially in key battleground states, and there will, there always are, there is a built-in process of audits that exist in every election. And if all of the auditing is done and there are no widespread irregularities that are found, and there is no substantive evidence to be looked at on the basis of potential election interference, I will have no problem moving on and accepting the election results as legitimate. And that is the difference between our election skepticism and the right's election skepticism. The right had no evidence of any election interference or election impropriety for the entire 4 years of the Biden-Harris administration, and they still continue to this day to swear that it was a stolen election, despite the fact that they have absolutely no evidence to support that whatsoever. That 60 lawsuits were brought and all of them were thrown out by Trump-appointed judges. That several audits were done that cost millions of dollars, that were funded by the Republican Party, that audits were done by people they hired in certain states, and they found no evidence of widespread tampering or widespread interference. And despite all of this, despite this gargantuan lack of evidence, and despite this overwhelming amount of evidence to suggest that the election was secure and legitimate, they still insist that it was stolen. So they're making this, you know, they're asserting this in the face of a complete lack of evidence. They continue to assert this. I am positing the possibility of election interference based on primarily and foundationally the fact that Donald Trump is a person who cannot be trusted. He is a cheater who cheats to get ahead in life. That is how he's done everything in his entire career. So whenever Donald Trump wins at anything, whether it's a game of golf or a business deal or a legal trial, anything like that, you have to be skeptical of, like, was the process done properly or was there some kind of illegal interference, some kind of collusion with, you know, secret money and things like that, because that's who Donald Trump is. So when Donald Trump wins an election that it just seemed like all of the numbers, all of the polling data were showing historical support for his opponent and showing that his support was only dwindling, that he had only continued to lose support over the years, when he wins not only in the electoral vote but in the popular vote, just on the basis that he is who he is, that he's just a guy who lies and cheats, and that's just who he is as a person, you have to immediately go, can we trust this? Also, the fact that, like, it's totally something he would do to intentionally poison the well of election skepticism so that when he eventually cheats, people won't be able to question him, because he's already poisoned the well of that form of discourse. So you just take, like, on the outset of, like, who Donald Trump is, the fact that he openly kind of brags about the fact that he's, like, trying to fix the system in his favor, that he says things like, we don't need the votes, we've already got the votes, that he says things like, I'm going to replace all of these different certifiers in different swing states to make sure that no matter what, we come home with the W. The fact that openly he and his team have been planning to cheat for the last 4 years, you've got to sort of look at and go, okay, is anyone going to look into that and make sure that everything was done above board? And then you start getting shit like Elon Musk providing the internet for polling stations in swing states and Starlink being the provider of the internet. I get it. I get that vote counting machines are not supposed to be connected to the internet and that the person providing internet for those places should not have a way of hacking into those machines. I get all that. I get how the tech works. However, it is kind of comically absurd that Elon Musk, the single biggest donor to the Trump-Vance campaign, was allowed to have his tech inside of polling stations. It's insane. It's kind of as crazy as if you told me that the 2020 election was tabulated on Hunter Biden's laptop. Like, it's fucking crazy. Like, it's so stupid. It's like, this is sort of how these guys operate. It's like they do things that are so obvious that people are like, it can't be that stupid, can it? It can't be that obvious that Elon Musk was somehow allowed to just, like, have his own personal machinery inside the room where the votes were being counted, and that somehow he could have like hacked into a machine using his own personal tech. It can't be that stupid, can it? That they somehow allowed that man to have his tech in that room. And then it's like, no, but they did. And of course, the obvious rejoinder is like, that's not how though, like a Starlink modem can't hack into a vote counting machine. But it's like, I don't know. Elon Musk himself said that it could. He said, I wouldn't trust machines to count votes because they're too easy to hack into. He was bragging about knowing the election results before the election results were tabulated. Several of his Starlink satellites crashed just a few days after the election was finalized. Like, I'm just saying, when it comes to people who are known as cheaters, who cheat at things and who lie about things, who are doing things that are like cartoonishly obvious, I think there is a reasonable standard of evidence being presented that would call for a reasonable investigation into the legitimacy of that, of those results. Obviously, even me just saying that, people are going to be like, oh, you're peddling conspiracy theories. That's disappointing. That's a bummer. And that's kind of the whole thing, is like, we should be allowed to question the legitimacy of certain processes and make sure that there are ample checks and balances in place to make sure that everything is operating the way it's supposed to. I don't think there's anything wrong with conservative people questioning the legitimacy of the results of the 2020 election. It's just that, like, once all of the evidence is laid out on the table and it's clear that the results were legitimate, you need to drop it. And I am willing to drop this if we actually are willing to do a real investigation, a real audit into what went down, and we are actually able to establish that there was no widespread tampering. What's weird is there are so many people on the left insisting right now, 2 weeks after the election, that there was absolutely no tampering, no interference, and that to suggest otherwise is crazy. And I'm like, well, guys, we haven't had a chance to actually look at it yet. We haven't had a chance to even gather the evidence yet. And you're already saying, don't do that. Don't be like them. Don't be an election denier. But it's like, well, hold on. I can be an election skeptic until other evidence proves me wrong. But like, if we're not even going to do the investigation because we don't want to look like them, then we're just, that's stupid. That's really stupid and careless. So this is a good question. Eddie Walls asks, what would happen if they do find evidence? Now, that's a really scary situation, isn't it? That's a maybe I move to Canada situation, because is Trump going to just go, you got me, you caught me? Is Elon Musk just going to go, ah, darn, you found us out? If we do find evidence through election audits that there was widespread tampering and interference and that Donald Trump cheated to win, what does that mean for the next four? Like, is there a system in place to deal with that, to make sure that he does not ascend to the executive branch of power and that the executive branch is handed over to Kamala Harris? Will his supporters accept that? It's all pretty damn scary. And I think that that's what people on the left are just afraid of. I honestly think that they're like so afraid of the potential of a civil war and the fallout of what would happen if we did find out that he cheated, that they're like, you know what? Let's just suck it up. Let's just suck it up and let him be president. Because not only what it means for the next 4 years, but what it means for the future of American democracy to know, if we actually had rock solid ironclad evidence that Donald Trump was able to successfully steal the 2024 election and cheat and falsify numbers, it could drastically erode the integrity and the confidence that the American people, what little confidence they have in the American electoral system. We already don't really have a lot of confidence in the system and don't like a lot of aspects of it, looking at you, Electoral College, but what little respect for it we do have, what little confidence we do have in it, would be all but completely dashed. What does the country look like in that scenario? So it's almost like a thing where it's like, I do want to find out if the election was legitimate, and also I'm not sure if I want to find out, because I don't know if I want to see what the world looks like when, if we know that that's what happened. T Jammer says, dude, get out of my head. I've been quietly discussing all of these things with my adult children. Yeah, exactly. It's like, what do we actually do if we find out he did indeed cheat? What does that actually mean? What's the next move? And I don't know, because he's obviously not just going to go to jail and just let us take over. And his supporters are obviously not going to stand for that. And we've seen over the last 4 years that, like, these people don't respond to evidence. We could show them direct evidence and say, oh, look, we have it right here. They wouldn't. As far as they're concerned, Joe Biden was allowed to be president for 4 years, even though he stole the election, even though they were never able to provide credible, substantive evidence of that. That's what they believe happened. They believe that the Democrats were allowed to have the executive branch of power, even though they cheated. So in their minds, it doesn't matter if Donald Trump cheated. He should be allowed to be president because they cheated first and the game is rigged anyway. I don't know. It is weird because apparently 75 million people who voted for him don't believe that our elections can be trusted, because they believe that the 2020 election was stolen, but they still showed up and voted for him anyway. And they still believe that this time it was legitimate. And so maybe public trust and confidence in our electoral process wouldn't be dashed. Maybe it would actually restore confidence, because we'd be like, we did an audit and we found what we needed to find and we were able to get the right result. And maybe that would boost American patriotism. And maybe, you know, maybe the 150 million or so people who sit out of elections every election cycle in this country would join with the left in opposing the relatively small amount of people who would it'd probably be about 10 to 20 million people of Trump supporters who would freak out, but maybe the rest of us could subdue them in some kind of civil conflict. I don't know. One more thing, and then we'll finish this. On a really simple question here from Kitty, who asks, how are we going to get anywhere as a society if we're still using capitalism as our economic system? Oh boy. yeah, just a really simple topic here. Obviously, we cannot progress to where we probably need to progress, especially with the advent of AI and stuff, with capitalism as our prevailing, economic doctrine. Some form of, you know, widespread socialism will be required as more and more jobs are automated and taken over by generative intelligence and artificial intelligence. It's just going to be that, like, as unemployment climbs and climbs and climbs and more people are on, I just watched a Coca-Cola holiday commercial that was completely done with AI. That's my job. That's my job right there. That's why we were striking a year ago, is we were trying to stop that from happening. And a year later, it's already happening. Like, I'm supposed to be able to compete to be in commercials for Coca-Cola and to make that money. Not only has my ability to make that money already been taken away by the advent of commercials being played on social media, like I did a Geico commercial earlier this year and I barely made enough to, I didn't make enough to cover my rent for 1 month. And that used to be that if you did a Geico commercial, you could make like $30,000 to $50,000 on one commercial. Not anymore. We make orders of magnitude less than we used to make. And now they're just replacing us altogether. So what happens to an economy when more and more people's jobs are being replaced by automated intelligence? How do you deal with that? You definitely can't, like, capitalism cannot make up for that. It's going to require some kind of socialist framework, some kind of framework where an overarching entity, be it the government or be it a artificially designed system, has to step in and make sure that people's base needs are taken care of at some point. So maybe it will just happen through force, where, like, the pain will have to get enough to the point where we're forced to institute universal basic income, universal basic healthcare, universal basic education, universal basic housing, and provide a base level of needs for people, because there's no longer a way for them to do that under a purely capitalistic structure. I don't know. And I don't know what that looks like if we get rid of physical money altogether and if everything goes digital and then you're just sort of given online digital credits that you get a monthly allowance. And, you know, if you're one of the few lucky people who's allowed to have a job, you can potentially earn more. But I don't know. I don't know what that'll look like. I know that that's like the nightmare of all capitalists who are winning at capitalism right now, which is actually a very small percentage of people. It's their nightmare that other people will start to have a fair seat at the table. It definitely does seem to be what's going to necessarily have to happen if the species wants to continue evolving and growing. So I guess the answer to your question is, when you say, how can we progress with capitalism as our framework? The answer is we cannot continue to progress past a certain point as things are going technologically with capitalism as our primary economic framework. We simply cannot. Capitalism will not allow it. It will implode on itself in one way or another. If we don't do it voluntarily, it will happen whether we want it to or not. Okay, that's it. That's it for this episode. Thank you so much. All right, that was it. We did Oops All Comments, and I think it went pretty well. We got pretty good topics from everybody in the comments, and a pretty good discussion was had. Thank you for helping me know what to say next and what to do. I guess I'll see you next time. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com or austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. That's the best place to get it. If you want some music, if you want my double vinyl, the holidays are coming up. You know what's a good gift? Get somebody the Austin Archer double vinyl, Beautiful Things, the deluxe edition, for Christmas. That's a good holiday gift. You can get that on my Bandcamp. You can order it and I'll ship it to you personally. It'll come from my living room to you. How cool is that? That's a really cool, unique gift. Go do that. AustinArcherMusic.bandcamp.com. Patreon.com/AustinArcher. Subscribe to the Patreon. Exclusive content over on the Patreon. More. You're getting more. And it's exclusive. And it's good. Thank you to the Patreon patrons. Shout out to you. Love you so much. Check out the Wonder Podcast, my new podcast with my friend Kramer England, where we're talking about movies. That's a niche. That's just a niche. We're just doing movies. That's it. Me and Kramer talking about movies on the Wonder Podcast. Check us out on YouTube. Currently, that's on my home YouTube page. It will get its own YouTube page eventually. And we're on all the streaming, podcast streaming places, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all that stuff. So check out the Wonder Podcast, and I think that's it. All right? Thank you to everybody in the studio audience on TikTok. Appreciate you. We'll see you next time. Till then, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye.